Hello, everyone. This is episode 30 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng, alongside Justin Louie here, and we're going to start episode 30 right now. Justin, how are you?
I'm very good. I don't have an iPad 2 yet, so I'm not as good as you, so why don't you tell us about that?
One day, Justin, one day. But yeah, let's dive into this. The show has been delayed a few days because I managed to secure an iPad 2 on launch day. Surprisingly, I didn't have to wait in line again for the iPad this year. Last year, I was lucky enough to have a friend who happened to be down in Washington State, and he picked up an iPad and brought it back here to Vancouver for me. This time around, it was a similar situation. Let's just jump into some first impressions right away. I noticed immediately it's a lot thinner, a lot lighter, like everything that people have been reading about. It feels a lot better in your hands. The previous iPad, I wouldn't say thick, but it was a lot thicker near the middle of the iPad. But now it's just flush and flat and thin throughout. The edges are now rounded. But I did find the iPad 2 to be a lot faster. But the one item that actually I was the most impressed with was the smart cover. The smart cover is pretty ingenious. The magnets, they latch on very securely. It's very difficult to miss a latch. Just sticks on to the iPad on the side there. And there are actually magnets built into the cover itself. I got the gray polyurethane cover. It's $39. And when it sits flush on the iPad's front, there's a magnet on the side there, so it keeps flat. And yeah, even when you fold it up into that triangle, there's a magnet there as well. So first impressions, I would say it's a lot faster, thinner. Smart case is great. It definitely is a pretty quick device, I would say. I don't think right now the applications out there are enough to really push the new A5 chip to the test. I did manage to pick up GarageBand, and I've tried iMovie. Both of those apps run really well, super smooth, no lag. GarageBand is a lot of fun, being able to play so many instruments. I'm still playing around with it. Look forward to a full review on iPadinCanada.ca coming up.
Yeah, your opinion is pretty much the same as everybody's. It's hard to believe that Apple would put out this product that's sort of been a revolutionary thing in the market. They add cameras, they add dual core processor, all these things, and all anybody can talk about is those smart covers. I even remember following on Twitter when it was announcing it. It was such a split reaction. People were either going, oh my God, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen, or people were making fun of it going, oh my God, Apple's trying to sell another little piece of crap for $40. And then I don't remember reading a bad review. Every review has mentioned it, and even some people like John Gruber have said he thinks it's the most compelling part of the new product. So I think it looks really cool. I can't wait to try it. But again, it's pretty amazing that a little $40 piece of basically rubber with some magnets could turn out to be that impressive for people.
Yeah, and I think it's a big improvement compared to the first iPad case. The first Apple case for the iPad, that black flappy thing, the material feels about almost the same. But the first case, it was a bit more difficult to put the iPad into because you had to slide it in, and it almost worked the same, but this time around, it's just a lot more. It's something that you would never would have, thought about, to put magnets and to have it latch onto the side. I mean, only that's something that only Apple can think up of.
Well, that's the thing. This case is so Apple-like, and now looking back at last year's, you're almost surprised that Apple would ever release a product like that. They obviously wanted to get it out there because they realized typing on the iPad, you needed those angles. I think Apple released it strictly to make it more usable, but it was pretty ugly and bulky for an Apple product. And I'm sure most people who make cases last year weren't that worried. They're like, yeah, a lot of people buy the Apple case, but we can do better. This year's case, the case manufacturers have to be pissed. I can imagine that the sales of third-party iPad cases are going to be a fraction of what they were last year, because it seems like just everybody is going to get this this smart cover.
Yeah, the only issue is that the back of the iPad is exposed to the elements. I mean, I'm sure it can withstand, you know, being placed on the table and whatnot. But if you're the type of person that really likes to take care of your products, I would definitely put on an invisible shield on the back. I have one coming. I think that, yes, it actually will add some more grip to the device as well. But at the same time, any sort of placements down on, you know, a table that might have some debris, it might scratch or nick, I don't have to worry about that anymore. Because right now it's just, you know, it's out there.
Yeah, my guess is going to be people are going to have the smart cover and the invisible shield. Other years you might have wanted something thicker. I think Apple spent so much time making this thing so light and so, like everyone says, even with the cover on, it's like thinner than last year's iPad with it. So it's once you see the new thinness and the cover, the new smart cover, I don't think you're going to want to bulk it up. So if you're worried about the back, I think some people just won't care about the back. And to me, this seems like the ultimate situation would be the smart cover and the invisible shield on the back. So some of the listeners probably saw your little Twitter video the other day about the iPad 2 unboxing. Did you make that on the iPad?
No, I didn't. I actually filmed, my wife helped me film me unboxing the iPad and the smart cover with my iPhone 4. And then I actually made that video right on my Mac using iMovie, using the new trailers. So it was a bit cheeseball, but, you know, it had the planned effects.
Yeah, I was just wondering if I thought maybe iMovie for the iPad had added those same trailer things. So you haven't really had too much time probably yet to spend with iMovie. Have you made anything? Is it easy to import video from your iPhone?
Right. Into iMovie? I haven't tried that yet, but it's really easy to get movies from your iPad 2 library. I love being able to just, you know, drag for clips and to be able to just touch. Like, it's such a different experience compared to using your mouse when you're using iMovie. It's a totally new experience, and I'm looking forward to playing around with it a lot more. I know that there was a group that released their first, you know, movie made with iPad 2 that's up. The capabilities of this device are out there. There's a lot of processing power now. It's just going to come down to apps that can utilize all that extra power.
Yeah, I'm pretty convinced that that's half the reason Apple released GarageBand and released it at that price. I think that's sort of them throwing down the gauntlet, saying, hey, iPad developers, you've kind of done pretty good in the first year, but this is what this thing is capable of. If you look at most apps, you look at Instapaper, Reader, they're beautiful apps. They work perfect for the iPad. They have these intuitive interfaces. Apple's Mail client on the iPad's really nice. GarageBand is a full desktop quality app that in some ways is better than the actual desktop app. So I think that's them throwing down the gauntlet saying, rethink whatever you thought to this point. There's nothing this iPad can't do. And by this time next year, I think people will just be blown away by the type of apps you can run on the iPad. And it's truly going to start becoming a situation where you're like, hey, do I want an iPad instead of a MacBook? I think we're heading in that direction. But I think that's plenty of talk about it for today. It's not even out in Canada. I'll have one within the next few weeks. Most of our listeners, or not most, but a bunch of our listeners will be getting them. So we'll keep covering the iPad 2 for the next couple of weeks, and we'll check back with you next week as you've had more time to try it out.
Yeah, I mean, if we take a look at the iPad 2 launch, which has been, you know, as expected, causing, you know, people to line up for days. I know there's that one, I think that one student in New York who was first in line. She sold her spot for $900. She had been waiting for, I think, almost 2 days. Not only that, even Apple stores in the Apple Store in New York and in Union Square in San Francisco, lineups went around the block. I mean, the lineup in New York actually went further. It went around the block and then it actually crossed the street and went down half the street. I can't believe so many people would line up for an iPad 2. And I don't even know if there's enough iPads for everyone.
It sure doesn't sound like it. And if Apple didn't do pre-orders because they wanted to get the hype and the lines again, and they were disappointed with the Verizon launch because everybody just pre-ordered and nobody showed up, if that's the reason they did it, then they got their wish, because even the smaller out-of-the-way stores were busy. Big stores, I heard that there was 400 or 500 people in line in Buffalo, which isn't exactly New York City. At South by Southwest, I don't know if you heard or our listeners have heard, but Apple, what they did is they made a pop-up store. They just rented out an abandoned building in about one night. They had the truck showing up all night delivering product and bringing in their tables and their fancy stuff, and they put out the Apple logos out front, and they did a pop-up store, and there was hundreds and hundreds of people lined up for blocks down there at South by Southwest. So if they wanted to build up hype, they've certainly done that. And now the alarming thing is, even though it's been out a day, or I guess almost 2 days now, it's 3 to 4 weeks shipping delay on Apple.com. And we all know last year when that happened, Canada and the other countries were put on the back burner and their date was delayed. So I have a bad feeling about getting it here in Canada. But if for some reason you are Canadian and you're wanting it now, I've heard that you can get lucky by going to some out-of-the-way Walmarts and Best Buys. Some of those aren't places people go to look for it right away. So there was even some people getting Walmart early. I kicked myself when I heard that. I'm like, why didn't I just go the night before to the Walmart right across the border from where I am, and I might have grabbed one. Walmart, I guess, put them out a little early in a lot of places. So that might be your best bet for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, the latest report out by Piper Jaffray in the States is that they did a survey of people waiting in line at the iPad 2 launch in New York City, and they also did some research on trying to find an iPad 2 in stock, and they said iPad 2 is literally sold out. They called Apple stores, they called other stores such as Walmarts and the Best Buys. Everything's sold out. The results of their survey showed that 70% of the people in line that they talked to, iPad 2 is going to be their first time, their first iPad. And about 60% of the people who they talked to, they also owned an existing iPhone. So people were willing to also shell out extra for the 3G model. And what the percentage of Mac and PC users were roughly about the same. About 50-50 almost. It's unbelievable how so many people want to get this iPad. And I mean, the differences between iPad 1 and iPad 2, they are significant, but it's not a full redesign. And for the second one to sell even more than the first one, I mean, it's just going to be crazy.
Kind of surprising, and they're good news for Apple. As you said, it's not a giant leap forward, so I guess you would expect a lot of people with iPad 1 to maybe stick with it. But at the same time, it's usually the geekiest of the geekiest fans lining up that first day. So if they're doing a poll in a lineup, you would expect it to be more Apple fanboys. I guess there's probably a lot of people who are pretty big Apple fans that decided to just wait a year because it was such a new product. But overall, I think that's good news for Apple, and I'll be very interested if Apple announces numbers in the next few days, because the initial reports were that Apple was well prepared for this launch and they expected to sell in the millions in that first few days. And then there was rumors just a couple days ago that the numbers could have been as low as 400,000 or 500,000 for the first couple days. So either way, it sounds like they all sold out. So it'll be interesting to see if the stock was really, really restrained or it just sold mind-boggling numbers. And I guess we'll find that out probably in the next few days.
Yeah, Apple's known to, wait a few days, let the numbers build up, and then release that press release that just, takes over all the headlines. I'm pretty sure at least, 500,000 iPad 2s or more have been sold, as the analysts have been predicting. It really depends on how much stock Apple has, built up for iPad 2. But the launch is, still in a full frenzy. Canada is going to get it on the 25th. A lot of people are waiting in Canada. They are excited for it.
We hope.
We're just going to have to wait to see. Yeah, hopefully it will launch on time. But let's move on to some iOS 4.3 features. I know that some of these are exclusive to the update that was released. But let me talk about quickly Photo Booth for the iPad. I just wanted to quickly touch on that. It's. I mean, if you played with Photo Booth before, and this is nothing new. It's just neat to see it on such a massive screen in front of your face. You can have some fun with it. FaceTime for the iPad. Haven't tried that yet, but it looks, fairly straightforward to FaceTime like it was on the iPhone or the latest iPod Touch. You just sign in with your Apple ID. But as for 4.3, I know, Justin, you've been testing personal hotspot. Can you tell us about your experience?
Yeah, it's funny. You have to talk about iPad 2 because you got one and I didn't. And then I have to talk about 4.3 because you're a jailbreaker and didn't update yet. Personal hotspot is kind of the big feature for 4.3. I tested it and it works excellent. As far as anybody still wondering, I know a lot of people don't jump on this stuff as quickly. The way it is for Rogers is if tethering worked for you, the hotspot will work. You have to have a little flag or whatever they call it on your account. So basically, if you have a data plan that has a 1 gig or more, you should be able to get it. I've heard very limited reports of some people being able to call customer relations and have that. Some people have 500 built into their plan, have been able to talk them into it. The interesting thing is there was a little bit of a panic the day it launched because I updated right away as soon as Apple put it live. Right away it worked. And then a couple hours later, anybody trying to use the hotspot feature, it was grayed out on the phone and everybody kind of panicked and thought maybe Rogers was blocking it. But what it turned out to be was that they just had major outages here in Ontario and that's why it couldn't activate. It wasn't some way to block it or make people call in. So again, if you're on Rogers and you have more than a gig, this is included. There's no extra price, which is great. And it works really well. To me, I like it so much better than tethering because basically it's always broadcasting a Wi-Fi name, gives you a password. I've purposely run it for a couple days without turning it off, and I don't see any noticeable difference in the battery. So you can kind of just be broadcasting it all the time. And then when you need your laptop or your iPad or anything else, it's very convenient just to select that as your hotspot, and you're good to go. So and far as I know, the last time I looked into it, people were contacting me on Twitter. It seems that Bell and Telus are a little behind the times, including some people messaging me saying Telus didn't even know about the feature and said just call back next week or something. So you may have to wait a little longer. I haven't checked into it to see if they updated it, but as of a few days ago, they weren't quite ready to do it yet. So at least, again, Rogers can be negative. We can be negative about them sometimes, but I'll give them kudos for not only not charging extra, but having it up and ready for people right away. And it's a great new feature and just makes the iPhone that much better.
Yeah. Like you mentioned, I use the app MyWi for my, hotspot sharing needs. Personal hotspot sounds great. Another issue or another feature of iOS 4.3 that wasn't in Apple's notes was password reentry for in-app purchases. Now, the big issue around this was that a lot of parents were complaining how their children would be playing with apps and suddenly they would, magically buy apps, buy in-app purchases because, their parents had entered their Apple ID password within the past 15 minutes, so they didn't have to re-enter it again. And what comes to mind is the incident with, I think it was buying Smurf berries. They were like $99 for a barrel of Smurf berries from this Smurfs app. And that resulted in a large charge on the bill of a parent. But now password re-entry is standard on iOS 4.3.
Yeah, that wasn't an issue for me, but I'm sure that makes a lot of people happy. Before we go through the rest of the 4.3 features, I will mention one other thing that I actually had two different people contact me this week via email including one person who was pretty upset, and we had a lengthy conversation about it. We discussed this on the podcast. We speculated whether Rogers would charge extra for this. They didn't. But the other program that we did discuss, where they're going to charge you $30 if you don't want to use your iPhone and you just want to share your current data plan, they have gone through. People are calling. And if you say buy a 3G iPad and you have the 6 gig data plan and you want to share that with your iPad, they are charging you $30. And as we discussed on this show, it's an absolute joke to charge $30 for 6 gigs and then another $30 just to access it. Gary mentioned that it was like buying a pizza and then paying another $10 for them to cut it up. It's ridiculous. And the only way these things change is by making your voice heard. So it may eventually involve a petition. At some point this week, I'll post on the blog or somewhere some numbers and some Twitter people. Rogers has 4 or 5 people on Twitter. I would send them @replies, let them know you're not happy. If you have a current account with Rogers, I would call customer relations and try to see if they will to do that for you free or knock down the price. Because again, I don't know how they're justifying it. Maybe there's some cost. Maybe it would be reasonable to charge $5 or $10 for administrative features or whatever, but to just charge $30, as much as you're charging for the data in the first place, just to be able to access it on another device is ridiculous. So I wanted to make mention of that. It's not right. And as much as we praise Rogers for that other decision, they need to be let know that this isn't acceptable, what they're doing with that policy.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot. I mean, if you have something, I definitely approach the team on Twitter, the Rogers social media team. They are, they do a fairly decent job of responding to everyone that sends them a message. Home sharing. Have you tried home sharing yet on 4.3?
I absolutely tried home sharing. I was really looking forward to that feature. And like everything with Apple, it just works. It can be for Apple. I mean, it works perfectly once it's up and running, but it might not be the most obvious setup. So if I know some people were kind of looking forward to it and then contacting me to kind of say, hey, where is this thing? You basically go into the iPod app and, well, first, actually, the quickest way to do it, because it depends on your setup, is make sure home sharing is set up on your iTunes, on your Mac. You have to have that enabled because they also allow you to block it. Then you go into the settings on the iPhone under the iPod settings, and there's an area where you can turn it on and put in your iTunes name and password. And then once you've done those two steps, then you just go into the iPod music player, click the More tab, and you should see a home sharing. Actually, it's not called home sharing. I think it's just called sharing. You click on it, and I find that it takes a good 10, 15 seconds to sort of activate, but then once it's activated, you just go to your artist, your albums, whatever it is, and they're all there. And I literally have hundreds and hundreds of albums, tens of gigs of audio, and it was all there. And the artwork shows up. And once it's made that initial connection, you play a song and it goes right to the next song without any kind of delay. I mean, maybe that could be a little different if you have a weird setup, but if you have a proper network at home setup, it worked perfect for me and I really like it. It's a nice way to, when you're at home, just have access to your entire iTunes library if you're working on your iPhone or your iPad. So it's a much welcome feature for me because I have a lot of music and it's a great way to access it now.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, people have been waiting for this, and I mean, it totally makes sense that it's out now with all of the new AirShare capabilities as well, sharing video to your Apple TV. I know that with the latest version of Air Video that's been updated for 4.3, you can now share full-out movies from your computer and AirPlay it straight to your Apple TV. So this, I know before that I had talked about on the blog about jailbreaking the Apple TV to install XBMC, Xbox Media Center, to stream AVIs from your computer to your Apple TV. But now you can do that with Air Video straight from your iPhone or iPad straight to your Apple TV. So a lot of people have been really excited about that.
Yeah, AirPlay was pretty cool up until now, but now it's a killer feature. For those of you, again, who haven't had time to try it or weren't aware of this, AirPlay now pretty much works right across the iOS. You can now take any picture you have in your camera roll, send it right to AirPlay. If you have videos recorded on your phone, again, send straight to Apple TV. You can take stuff you're working on in iMovie straight to your TV. The YouTube app, you can now send anything you're watching on YouTube. If you have video in Safari, in the Safari browser, you can send it. And they've even opened it up for third-party developers, which just means the sky's the limit. I can't wait to see what we'll see. But if you're interested in trying that out, Vivo, which is a really cool music video app, is the first third-party app that I'm aware of that is updated for it. And you can just pick any music video on your phone. It has a little down in the right-hand corner in AirPlay button. You press it, it asks you which device you want to send it to, and you're good to go. And I'll also mention quickly that if you don't have an Apple TV, but you're one of those people who have a 24-inch or 27-inch iMac, there is a third-party developer who's made a thing called AirPlayer that will allow you to send videos from your iPhone or iPad to your iMac. I still don't understand why Apple hasn't built that just directly into QuickTime or iTunes or something, but I have a feeling that's on the way. If you're making a 27-inch computer with that beautiful of a screen, you might as well take advantage of it. So my guess is we'll see that feature soon, but in the meantime, check out a thing. Just Google AirPlayer and you'll find it if you don't have an Apple TV but you want to try this stuff out.
Nice. Okay, we've just briefly touched on some of the features from 4.3 that we thought you should know about. One other thing that I just realized was that on iPad 2 and on previous for developers that have been creating apps on the iPad, you can actually unlock some multi-touch gestures. Apple didn't release this to the public yet, but if you do have Xcode downloaded and you are a developer, you can activate gestures on your iPad 2. If you're a developer, it's a free download. If you aren't a developer, you can buy it for $4.99 from the Mac App Store, and you can enable them right on your iPad 2.
Yeah, the gestures are awesome. And if you remember when they first started showing up, when people were digging into the beta, I mentioned on this podcast, they're so cool and they're so revolutionary that I was surprised that Apple was going to include them in 4.3. I assumed that would be one of the big things for 5. And then sure enough, they decided not to include them in 4.3. And I think that's why. I think they want the developers testing them. And then that'll be a big part of 5. Because if you've seen any of the videos, it's incredible, including one where you take several fingers and instead of using you can actually multitask with a gesture. So instead of going down, double clicking, bringing up the multitasking bar, you can just take several fingers and swipe across your screen to go to other running apps. To me, that just speeds it up and changes the whole interface. So I can't wait for that to be available for everybody, most likely in iOS 5.
Yeah, it's an amazing feature when you can think about it. It reminds me of Minority Report with Tom Cruise there, with him swiping on that big-ass screen thing. Anyways, there are a few rumors that have popped up regarding the next iPhone. The latest one here, Phil Schiller, confirms that a white iPhone is coming this spring. He didn't say iPhone 4, he didn't say iPhone 5, he just said a white iPhone. So if that is indeed true, he sent this out from his Twitter account. This might give weight to this previous rumor that Apple was going to hold an early media event in April to share new features for iOS 5 and to also introduce their Mobile Me revamp. Typically, Apple will, they will give some new features of iOS 5 months in advance of any release of any new iPhones, so developers can prepare their apps for the next phone.
Yeah.
And not one more feature, and then we'll just get into some discussion. Another rumor was out from the site called Ideals China. They talked about how they were able to get some photos of this iPhone 5 image that case manufacturers use to develop cases. And this new image showed that there's going to be a larger edge-to-edge display on the iPhone 5. I don't know if that's true, but that was just what's been happening right now.
Well, the first rumor about the April event it is just a rumor at this point, but I would be absolutely shocked if it doesn't happen. Apple always does a small event. It won't be a big, huge Moscone Center keynote, but it'll be on Apple campus, and they will do a little demo of iOS 5. Then in June at WWDC, they'll announce the phone. So I think I'd be shocked if those things didn't happen. The rumors about iPhone 5, I guess we're right around that time where we'll have to start reporting on those every week. There's other rumors that the antenna is going to be in the Apple logo, that it's going to go back to a brushed aluminum back. Who knows? I guess we'll just keep finding out. Normally, I would say I don't believe any of those, but we've seen a little bit of cracks in the Apple secret machine lately. Some of this stuff does leak out, so I guess it could be possible. My biggest interest this year will be they changed the device so radically last year, and I absolutely love it. If they went to a totally different design and I didn't like it, I was wondering to myself, will be this the first year that a lot of the real hardcore geeks will hold on to their phone? Because I really love the current form factor, but knowing Apple, it will be completely changed, but be different enough that you'll want to get it. So that's what I'm wondering. The one more thing I'll add just quickly to 4.3 is they did spruce up Ping, which is the music service, a little bit. You can now get push notifications for your friends on Ping if you have a new friend request or a new comment, and you can now share and post about music right through the iPad app or the iPod or the iPad on the iPhone. The only issue is you have to have bought the music from the iTunes store. They finally allow you to post about any song on the Mac version, but so far on the iOS, you can only post and share music that you bought from iTunes. I think Ping is pretty much dead for other people, but if you do like it, it's got actually pretty compelling recently with all these additions. I almost feel that had they introduced it initially with all these features, it might have actually went somewhere. But if you're into music, I think it's at least worth turning on, finding a few of the artists you really like to follow. A lot of the artists update what they're up to, post free videos and free songs. And then if you find a few people who have kind of interesting musical taste, you can kind of see what they're buying. So I do like that feature. And I just think that Apple sort of blew it by rushing it out and not having most of these features. I think if it had launched with everything it can do now, it might have been more successful and better accepted by people.
Yeah, I mean, I think Ping had its moment, but it's a thing of the past now. I can't remember the last time I used Ping or I even checked it out. Apple needs to definitely work on it. I would call it, you know, a flop. Typically Apple makes some pretty amazing things, but with Ping, I honestly just, you know, it's another social network and I don't think there's any way I can keep up.
Yeah. Well, the thing about Ping, and we won't go on too far with Ping, but I've even gone back and watched Steve Jobs announce it. I think it's a little bit of a victim of people making a bigger deal out of it. I would love to just be able to ask Steve Jobs with no media around to say, is this what you intended or were you trying to create a whole social network? Because you could take it both ways. A lot of people, when he said, oh, it's Twitter meets whatever, people thought, hey, this is Apple really jumping into the social thing. They're trying to compete with Facebook or Twitter. Whereas I never looked at it as, hey, this is this whole new social network Apple's trying to build. To me, it was just an evolution of their music recommendation thing. It's like when you go to Amazon and it says, oh, if you bought this CD, you might like this CD. That's how I use it. I'm not on there every day interacting with people, but it's pretty neat that when you make a purchase, other people can see it or other people I'm following. I always looked at it as just another element of the iTunes store, kind of an improved recommendation engine, not a whole social network. So if you look at it from that standpoint, then I think it's a success. If you're into buying music, I've bought music that I've seen other people recommend or found out that something was available that I didn't realize. So I think if you look to it from that way, then I think it did the job, and I'm sure they're selling more music because of it for the people who are using it. But if you were looking for it to be kind of like, this is Apple's social network, then yeah, it's a huge failure if that's what they were intending. But like I said, even if you go back and listen to the keynote, to me, you could take it both ways. I don't think Steve Jobs quite made it out to be what everybody else did. But then as people overblew it the next few days, it's not like they exactly released a statement to say, hey, no, that's not what we're trying to do. So I'm not sure. But if you just want to find a way to kind of see what people are listening to, what's popular on the App Store, it's pretty cool if you're into music. but as a social network, no, it's just not enough built into it. And like you said, more importantly, we all just sort of have social network fatigue. There seems to be a new service every day that looks compelling, but just how many of these things can we possibly sign up for and keep up with?
Yeah, it's a bit much at times. Honestly, I feel, you know, I think a lot of people feel that Apple is going to introduce some sort of, you know, messaging app or some sort of social network app that will link an iPhone user with any of its iPhone or iPod Touch or iPad friends. I mean, I think this would be a natural evolution with these iOS devices. I mean, you look at FaceTime, how it's now, you know, it's on three different devices. You can now do FaceTime from your Mac computer to any of these devices as well. It's become a standard. I strongly feel that Apple's going to release something in iOS 5. It's the time is now, and I feel it's coming. I mean, slowly they're linking all of these devices together with FaceTime, and it would only make sense to have some sort of chat application.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's going to happen soon. You're probably right. It's probably a iOS 5 feature. Hopefully it is.
Okay. So I think we've covered pretty much everything we wanted to talk about. Is there anything else that you'd like to add right now, Justin?
No, I think that's good. We waited a couple days so we could get your impressions about the iPad. Like I said, I'll have one in the next few weeks. I'm sure there'll be a lot of great apps coming out for it, so we'll continue to cover it, and we'll be back on a regular schedule next week, back to Friday with our regular show with the app recommendations. I guess I would quickly mention, for people who didn't notice, because you and I both talked about it this week, is there's a pretty cool app that's kind of blowing up at South by Southwest called LocalMind. And the thing I like about it is it allows you to sort of log in with your Foursquare or your Gowalla, so you don't really have to start fresh. But what it's designed to do is for you to get questions and answers from people in your area. Now, unfortunately, I seem to be one of the only two or three people in my city with it, but one person did ask a question and I answered it. But basically, when you commit to the app, and I think it's anonymous, I couldn't see who answered it and I don't think they could see me. You just basically launch the app, it knows where you are, and it says, hey, somebody in this area is looking for a good place for a burger, and you can answer or not answer. And I think it's the kind of app that I downloaded the minute I saw it and thought, wow, this is cool, but this is going to be another one of those things that I try to talk all my friends into using, and they'll roll their eyes and go, oh my God, Justin, another one of your things to sign up for. But it seems to be better than the rest. It integrates with some accounts you already have, and it seems to be pretty popular at South by Southwest. So maybe it is something that could take off. And I know you reviewed it and liked it as well. So I would say that would be our app pick for this week.
Yeah, LocalMind is really neat. I think it has a lot of potential because it doesn't rely on specific LocalMind users. It pulls from Facebook, Places, Gowalla, and Foursquare and integrates that into the app. So it's really cool. I've tried it out. If that's the one app recommendation that we can finish for this episode, definitely check it out. But before we finish, there is one more app that I want to talk about. If you're an iPad user right now, I came across this app. It's called, give me one moment here. It's similar to Flipboard. You might have heard about this already, Justin. It's called Zeit.
I've heard of it, but hadn't had a chance to check it out.
Zeit. It's a personalized magazine. I actually like it a lot better than Flipboard. You don't need to create any sort of login. You don't need to do any of that stuff. Basically, you just select the sections that interest you, and everything is laid out in an amazing, easy-to-read format, just like Flipboard, but the variety of stories are actually better. There are even stories from iPhoneinCanada.ca. You can enter in your Twitter account, and it can sort of detect what kind of activity that you like, and you can actually vote stories with a thumbs up or thumbs down, and it will learn what kind of stories that you like and will go back to those sources for next time. So if you are using your iPad, check it out. It's called Zeit. That's Z-I-T-E. So I thought it's definitely an app to check out.
Yeah, I'll be checking it out as soon as I get my iPad. And I think, I mean, we end up recommending similar apps to that. It seems like every couple of weeks. Again, I've said it before, I'll say it again. All of these apps take a little bit of a learning curve, but they're worth your time, whether it's Reader, whether it's Instapaper, whether it's Flipboard, whether it's so many of them I can't even remember. There was Pulse. These are all kind of apps that allow you to kind of curate news from around the internet, stuff that you're interested in. Some allow you to get really manual where you just subscribe to the exact websites you want. Some just allow you to, hey, no, I'm into tech and I'm from Canada, and they kind of tailor it for you, but they're all worth it. And I find that every once in a while I hear from someone saying, oh yeah, I was intimidated by RSS feeds or getting all that together, and now I do and I love it. Once you get into that world, you'll never kind of view the internet the same way. You waste so much time searching Google, finding it, when time and time again, it's a series of sources that kind of have the best material. And it's just so much better to just pull up your iPad, pull up your iPhone, launch that app, and hey, here's hundreds of news stories that I can just kind of casually flip for, instead of sitting down at your browser and spending hours, and half that time is just trying to locate the stuff. So again, it can be a little intimidating at first, but I think it's worth your effort to try one of those numerous apps we've discussed in the past to get your news in a quicker, easier way.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that's it for this episode, episode 30 of the iPhone podcast. Thanks again for listening. Please rate us on iTunes. Tell us if you are enjoying the podcast. Tell us if you're not enjoying the podcast. We want to hear your feedback so we can work harder to make this better. A quick shout out to Lucky Bar, Johnny Rotten, Shahab from Montreal Far West, and Brian Laker, David Jong, Kathleen, Matt. Thank you for giving us ratings. And to our American listeners, I've been trying really, really hard to make sure that I am speaking clearly so you can hear me.
Cool. Oh, the one thing that actually reminds me, yes, I thank everybody so much for their feedback. I always look at them when you point out certain things. There's a few people, issues with volume. We're trying to work all this stuff out. It's just going to keep getting better. But the thing that I wanted to quickly mention that blew my mind, I don't know why I had never looked into this before. I always kind of assumed that we had 80% of our listeners in Canada and maybe 20% from the US. And I went to all the different iTunes stores and looked at the back end of our stats. And I was amazed that, yes, still about half or more are Canadian. We have a lot more US listeners than I thought, which is great. The podcast tries to be for everyone. We try to sprinkle in the Canadian news, but it is good for anyone. But I was blown away by all the other countries. There's 20, 30 other countries with significant numbers. I think the third or fourth highest rated is Singapore. We have a ton of listeners in India, a whole bunch in the UK, and that just blew my mind. So for all those people listening from those other countries, I thank you, and I'm sorry that we've ignored you to this point. I never imagined we'd have that kind of reach. So listeners all over the world, thank you so much for listening and the feedback, and rate us, and well, like I said, we're listening and keep doing this thing.
Right. One last note. Don't forget to follow the show at theiphonepodcast.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. I am located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada. Justin is at twitter.com/Justin, and that's L-U-E-Y for Louis. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.